Welcome to Manager Tools. Manager Tools Internal Pandemic Response, Part 3. This cast answers these questions. What has Manager Tools done to address the pandemic? What internal actions has Manager Tools taken? What can small companies do? So if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go. So folks, we just talked about cutting expenses. And we took, Mark and I just had to take a break in the recording. And so we are now recording sometime later. And since we just talked about cutting expenses, we thought we'd share some things that happened just recently in between the two recordings.
We're recording sometime later. What is it? We had a CIA black ops site and we're not allowed to reveal our location. Yeah. So we recorded Sunday for, was that our second bit of recording for this one?
It was.
It was, right? Yes, it was. So we recorded on Saturday because we normally deliver on Monday and we're trying to do timeless. I would stand by this guidance. This guidance has timeless value.
Sure.
But it's also timely, right? And we recorded on Saturday knowing that we're going to have a long cast and we only recorded what we thought would be the first part. And then yesterday, Sunday, we recorded for an hour and 20 minutes or thereabouts. A bunch of that may have been chit-chat beforehand. We probably ended up with an hour, hour and 15 minutes or something. And now we realized that we had several pages of show notes to go through. And so we recorded today. We're recording on Monday. And this one, Mike, will this will go out Wednesday, you think? Is this part of Wednesday?
Wednesday, yes.
Wednesday, okay, yeah. And, I mean, part of what's happened is, even in the last 24 hours, stuff has changed.
As happens in crises, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so where were we?
When we stopped recording, we were just finishing up on cutting cost, right? And we finished up by saying something along lines about maybe our actions seemed a little bit harsh, but remember, folks, we're not cutting employees. Next thing we're going to talk about was new revenue, looking for new revenue. But
yeah,
before exactly. We do, I think we want to give them an update of, okay, what have we done in the last 24 hours?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think I did a very good job, guys, talking to you about Mike's spreadsheets that were created that showed revenue modeling, the likelihood of something canceling, something being rescheduled, weighted risk associated with that, whether the revenue came in a certain month. Mike and I were talking before the cast this morning about the model. Something Mike said, which I should have engraved in brass, is, I know the model is wrong, which as a high C, Mike doesn't like being wrong. But the point is, there's no projection, there's no model of the future that is right. But the standard for something like this is not that it's right or wrong, but that it's helpful. It's certainly more right or less wrong or more useful or less chaos-inducing than having no model at all. And the beauty of these models is that it allows us to look at costs, it allows us to look at revenue, and hopefully I made the case, it also allows us to look at time. If a piece of revenue—
Hey, dude, before we go on to time, I just got to acknowledge the elephant in the room. Hey, folks, if you're getting annoyed at the crows that are picking at the pieces of dead projects that we've killed to reduce costs, don't get too annoyed. And
yeah,
longtime listeners, you remember, God, it was 50, probably in the— 15 years ago, we had a bunch of rooster. We had recorded early in the morning. Mark was in Texas at the time. We had roosters in the background. So roosters and crows.
We had Sydney come down one time. Your little princess. We had what else? We had. I've certainly had trucks go by the house.
Oh, I had crickets when I was on vacation down the Outer
Banks.
Oh,
that's right. Yeah,
Outer Banks. I was recording by the pool, getting eaten by 1,000 mosquitoes.
Now, I suspect there have been times where I thought I was essentially introducing some background noise in the last 10 years, and Paul Figiani, working his magic, got rid of it.
I don't think he has a crow filter, though. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I don't think we would want. I mean, that said, it's pretty. What? Let me tell you, what they do on the TV shows where they filter and highlight and background and decibels and everything, it's pretty cool.
All right. Sorry, folks. Sorry, dude, to diverge. I just couldn't help it.
I have a lovely view out my office windows, which are open to the fresh air in Monterey, California. Okay. Anyway, so the idea of the model helps us determine as things change. By the way, that's not a crow. That's a truck. Allows us to make adjustments all the time. Look, if suddenly we had a company say, you know that $250,000 in work we're going to do for the rest of the year? We're going to postpone that until January. Now, we want our clients to tell us stuff like that. Now, that would be economically painful for us, but we're the vendor. They're the customer. And so we would need to know that and adjust, and maybe we'd have to make further cuts. Now, Mike said we didn't cut payroll, and that's why we're cutting everything else so hard, because payroll is so big. But maybe we'd have to cut payroll. We'd cut our payroll, Mike and my payroll first, our salaries first. But the question is, are we going to survive? And that's the first responsibility of an executive. So anyway, we've got these models. And in the last 24 to 36 hours, some things have happened that allow us to update our plan. And I just wanted to walk through them. The first one is one of our clients rescheduled. They were scheduled in the model. They had canceled a delivery that was coming up in April or May, if I remember right. Mike, correct me if I say this wrong.
Yeah, it's April.
Mm-hmm. And we did a model. Maggie heard from them, hey, we're not going to do this in April. And they said, look, we're pretty certain we'll be able to do it in September. And Maggie said, great, we'll put you on the books for September. I think we even had a date. But even if we did it, Maggie felt fairly certain it was going to happen. I think we gave it 100% likelihood, although I guess that wouldn't jive completely with fairly certain. But regardless, it was on the books at some weighted number for September. This company has since gotten back to us and said, no, it's not September. We want to do it in August, and actually picked a date. So in terms of the impact to the plan, and Mike, I know you're more in the weeds than this on me, so if I say this wrong, just interrupt me and correct me. You could be like a crow. there is no annual impact to this. And if we were looking at our financials 5 years from now, globally, over year to year and so on, the fact that it moved from September to August is not an issue. In normal times, that would be a scheduling issue. In this particular case, it's not just a scheduling issue. Do we have presenters available to do it at that time? But it's actually a case of the time value of money. That's actually a net win for us if they do it in August versus September, because our models show our cash burn every week and every month through the end of the year. Because if we make money in September, but we go out of business in August, that doesn't do us any good. It's just like the stories we told about companies that are profitable on the way up, but they literally run out of cash. In fact, there are companies that are growing so fast, I'm not talking about ones that are venture capital funded or whatever, but that they take on debt while they're growing and are, quote, profitable because they run out of cash. But running out of cash on the way up is very different than running out of cash on the way down. So there was no impact to the annual number, but there was a positive impact to our cash flow models in terms of how much cash Mike's model showed us as having at the end of August. Now, that's actually not true, because as I think I said, we said yesterday, Mike, we increased, did we talk about this, that we increased our day sales outstanding? I don't think we've talked about that yet.
We did. Yeah, we did.
We did? Okay.
Yeah, our day sales outstanding is 29 days. We doubled it to 60.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, so in other words, we won't get paid in August, but there's a difference. September, if we do it in late September, 60 days is November, we get paid. Well, that's when the cash comes in. And you have to know that. And in order to know that, you have to have a model. Okay, some other things that happened. The London Hotel, which, by the way, I tweeted about and mentioned, I think, and things I think, there was $1,000 in initial deposit, which contractually they could have kept, but Cassie Smith, our logistics associates, called the hotel. We have a good relationship with them and negotiated with them and got back the full amount. So that was $1,000 coming back to us. Now, Mike, does that come back as a credit on it? It's simply, It's a bill we don't have to pay.
It's a refund to our credit card.
Refund to our credit card. So we would have already, so the credit card would have already been paid. Well, I guess the question is, if it was on the card, did it come off before we wrote a check for that amount? But it doesn't matter. It's still
free cash. We had already paid it. We already paid it. So it's extra $1,000 or.
Yeah, good. Now, on the other hand, we had a client cancel. We had a client that was, we were due to present, I think, in April. They deferred at the time, no problem. Might be in the spring, might be in the summer, might be in the fall. And then they realized this is way more serious. And so they canceled. So that was a $12,000 net hit to our cash plan, cash planning. And so we had to put that into the plan. But again, in the last 36, really maybe even up to 48 hours, we've found some other expenses we can get rid of. As the conversation has shifted, as people are paying attention, we found another expense reduction of $1,400 a month. And that adds up to $12,000 a year. Now, keep in mind, it's $12,000 and that's good, but we have to model it as $1,400 a month so we can keep track of our cash. If all we did was say, how much money will we have left over at the end of the year, that would be not fine enough accounting to help us manage. Now, if you're at a big company, if you're at a $100 million company or something like that, it may be different. Although, frankly, based on the economic impact of what we think is going to happen, I'm not sure it does. I think big companies are still looking at months, maybe quarters if you're a multi-billion dollar company. Next is AT&T Wireless, our wireless provider for everybody in the company. And several of us have iPads, and they're not only Wi-Fi, but they're also cellular-enabled. And Mike said, boy, do we really need cellular service? I mean, on these things, could we not do it? And I wrote this. He sent me an email over the weekend, and I said, yeah, I think we can get rid of that. I mean, the question is it critical, right? We're cutting hard, so we ask ourselves, is it critical? And the answer is no, it's not critical. Now, in case you're wondering how that happened, we didn't go to Kate and Sarah, who are most likely to be using the cellular plan. I think for Mike, for almost everybody else, a cellular plan would just be gravy. I mean, it wouldn't be convenient, something. Yeah, exactly. So we didn't ask Kate and Sarah. Mike suggested it, identified a potential savings because we were able to look at the bill and separate cellular plans for iPads from cellular plans for phones, which obviously we're not going to turn off the phones, and found another $2,200 a year. Now, Mike sent it to me. I said, yes, do it. Go for it. And then, and only then, did I send a Slack message to Kate and Sarah and say, hey, are you guys okay with this? Because we could always go back and say, nope, reestablish it or whatever. But we're not socializing all of these decisions every time. Sometimes we're asking for input, like we did with many of the cuts, and ask for people to justify or to consider and so on. In this particular case, we cut and then we ask, and the people who we asked, both Kate and Sarah said, nah, I can do without that. It's totally fine.
Yeah, it's even better. I think you left off one part of this, Mark, is that this cut came out, it's like I didn't have the idea. I wish I could claim it, but I did not. It was Paul Schwier.
Oh, that's right.
One of our associates here at Manager Tools. And this was a function of, one, our communications with the staff, with what's going on, our initial plan to cut, and folks, we have great folks at Manager Tools. There are no better people around. And Paul went out, just like a number of our other associates, and identified additional opportunities.
Yeah.
So, well done, Paul.
Yeah. Hoorah. Hoorah would be high praise for Paul, as he is a Marine.
Yeah, Marines have no problem just cutting stuff out.
Yeah, absolutely.
As long as it's not my heart.
Yeah. Okay, so we wanted to give you that update on costs and the modeling thereof. Time to go to revenue, Mike?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, so first of all, guys, revenue tends to be different. Thinking about revenue and how to deal with it is different from expenses because revenue models are very, very different, but costs are costs. And as Drucker says, you don't control costs, you don't model costs, you cut costs, okay? Here's what we did to address revenue. Now, to tell you the truth, this is going to sound very pedestrian. And I could probably read 20 books and come up with something 5% better. But I checked with a couple other small company owners I know. Of the four people I checked with, three of them didn't do this. And the one that did said, yeah, I didn't actually do it that way. They were literally only worried about cost. If there's a treatise out there that explains how to do this, then I'd love for somebody to recommend it. Oh, Mike, I forgot. We need to go back. Because when we're talking about costs, we also talk about cash, right? We're attempting to conserve cash. Should we tell them about airline tickets?
Well, sure. Absolutely. Right.
So folks, one of the things that happens, you know, I'm sure many of you buy airline tickets in there, although not lately, and they're non-refundable. And I actually had a conversation with somebody a few years ago where they said, oh, I bought a non-refundable ticket. I'm out of luck. I said, well, that's not what non-refundable means. It means they're not going to give you a cash back, but you still have a credit with the airline for that amount. And this person's face lit up immediately. It says, I didn't know that. So as you can imagine, we travel a lot. We decided not to get rid of first class. We decided to keep our travel agent. But we also decided to be mindful of the non-refundable tickets that we've had to make changes to, and there are credits sitting with the airline companies that we could avail ourselves of. And between Kate and Sarah and Mike and I, all of whom are the ones that travel, there was $15,000 in airline credits available to us. Now, if a trip costs $1,000, that's 15 trips we can make. And by the way, that's a huge part of how we make revenue, public flying, presenting public conferences and presenting client conferences. So that will happen. That cash outlay will be saved early on as we come back online to full economic dynamism, if you will, in the world, depending upon how long sheltering in place and so on occurs. Now, it takes some management. In fact, Mike and I had an email exchange this morning, and what it takes is Kate might have to, or Sarah or Mike might have to choose a different flight or a different airline in order to make sure that money gets spent first. And airlines often don't talk about this on their side of the coin. The economics of airlines are very interesting in this regarding how much money they've been given that they still owe people a potential ticket for, and also the frequent flyer miles, that's another way. We could easily choose to say to Kate and Sarah and me and you, okay, well, I think right now I have 200,000 miles I could spend. We could easily say, at least certainly for you and I, and we may not choose to do so with Kate and Sarah because they're not owners, we could say, okay, guys, if you're going to be traveling for work, we want you to spend your airline miles, and we'll reimburse you for them at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. I mean, I that would be reasonable. And again, that's a cash conservation effort. Okay, sorry, we just did another detour into costs.
The detour cast.
Yes, exactly. Okay, here's what we did to address revenue. Said, hey, we need to figure out, you know, let's make more revenue, okay? And that's more cash sooner. And so I called a meeting with most of our team to brainstorm potential new products or services or marketing, in other words, making more people aware of our products, assuming we could do it for relatively inexpensively, or promotions. Discounting is the one that comes to mind, even though, as a general rule, Manager Tools is not that into discounting. And if you've wondered why, there are some people who go through their life and everything they buy, they immediately ask for a discount. I don't live that way, but I respect that that's one way to go through life. And people say, well, I'd like a discount on this. And we always, our general approach, it's not that we don't do it. Our general approach is the podcasts are free. We can't discount it anymore. The amount of information, Mike, if you had to put a percentage of all the information we've put out, and what percentage of that information is protected by a paywall?
Oh, 5%, 2%?
I was going to say 5, and then we might argue about 2 or 1%.
I think, right? 5 is probably, yeah, being conservative. Yeah, it's probably closer to 2%.
Yeah, exactly. So for the record, guys, we're an economic entity. We're a profit-seeking business, and we could, as the Dilbert cartoon once said, give away more of our stuff for free, and then pretty soon, we wouldn't exist anymore.
You get it all for free, and yeah. Until you didn't.
Yeah, exactly. And we'd spend some money, and then we'd, well, it's I've said this joke before. I know apparently other people don't think it's funny, but the guy goes to the car dealership to buy a car, and he says, I think I'd like that one. He says, well, that's a good choice, sir. We're going to take a loss on that one, but we're going to make up for it with volume. I mean, that doesn't actually work. If you lose money on every transaction, volume is not going to help you out. Okay, so we did a brainstorm about ways that we could bring in cash in the next 6 months. I told everybody, hey, look, this is what we're going to do. It's going to be an hour-long meeting, and I gave them 24 hours notice so they could start writing down ideas. As a general rule, we don't want to surprise people with brainstorms, okay? We came up with about 60 ideas in about 15 minutes. Now, it could have taken less time, but we're doing this all remotely, guys. And so we found that distance brainstorming, plus when you do true visual recording, and visual recording is if you're in a room together using a flip chart and writing down people's ideas, and believe it, visual recording, visible recording is hugely valuable. People process things differently in different times, and so them seeing the idea and thinking about the idea is helpful. Now, in this case, what we did was a Google Docs, a Google sheet, and Wendy was kind enough to do her best to keep up and type out what people said. So that visual recording in that vein creates some administrative friction. That's why it took us 15 minutes. We then spent another 45 minutes talking about what we had and really kind of trying to continue the creativity and see where we were. And then I said, okay, guys, this is great. These are all wonderful ideas. Who knows which ones we'll do and whether they'll work or not, but that's another discussion. So I said, let's have another discussion tomorrow, okay? I'm going to say to y'all, I want you to look at the list. I want you to cogitate on it, ruminate on it. And tomorrow, each one of you is going to be able to recommend that we do as many as 10 of these, okay? And overnight, Wendy added a column for each of us in the spreadsheet to allow us to put an X in that ideas row, whatever it was. And if you've not done it yourself, I'm sure many of you have, and I don't mean to be talking beneath you, but there's a simple Excel formula that allows you to have people put an X in a cell, and then you can add that row or that column. How many X's are there in that row? And then Excel or Google Sheets in this case allows you to sort the ideas by the most responses. And basically what you end up with is a spreadsheet that shows you the most liked or most recommended ideas at the top and all the way down the list. Now, I want to just mention as an aside here, not really related to pandemic response, but it's a good general rule. Be careful, guys, of calling this kind of work voting, okay? Because voting suggests the winner or winners are, by definition, where action will be taken. And it generally suggests that this is a democratic process. It's not a democratic process. And I tried to make very clear to folks that this was input to a decision that ultimately I had to make as I suppose you could call one of my titles chief revenue officer, but I think that's stupid. Might even be galactically stupid. I mean, I don't know.
That's stupid.
Chief, yeah, I mean, revenue. It's CRO that people have, or chief revenue officer. Like, okay, you know, all right, great. Look, this was not a form of democratic choosing. When it comes to governance, human governance, rights, principles of freedom, democracy, diversity, justice, society, culture. Democracy is unbelievably powerful. As Churchill said, it's the second worst form of government, and all the other ones are tied for last. But economic organizations are not democratic, or at least the vast majority of them are not. If everyone had said they'd loved an idea that we would have had to spend $25,000 to create, even if it had the ability to make $100,000, the question would be the modeling about when we would make that $100,000, but also when we would have to spend the $25,000. I'm making this up as an example. We might have had to ignore that input, but not if people think they're voting. Now, I'm not going to list all of them, but I think I have, I think of the 60, about 10 of them got notable votes. Maybe it was only five or six. And I've just taken the liberty of gone down the list, and Mike and I have gone through it. Now, look, guys, these are what we were excited about in terms of people recommend, a lot more people recommending them. We're sharing this with you basically raw in the last 24 hours. We haven't decided whether to do any of these. We haven't modeled them. I mean, and Mike's a smart guy. He can probably model any one of them in 20 or 30 minutes to see what the impact would be. But we just want to share with you what we're thinking. Please don't consider this to be an offer or a proffer of something.
But do let us know if you're excited, though.
Yeah, if something excites you, gosh, absolutely let us know. Okay. The highest vote getter, there I said votes, bring forward our License Plus interviewing series offer. Folks, if you don't know, our 15th anniversary is coming up June 26, 2020. And we had been planning on commemorating our 15th anniversary by doing a couple of small things, but also doing what we did when we first initiated licenses many, many years ago. I think 13 years ago. I can't remember when. We provided the interview series of podcasts as an incentive. So our interview series is very popular with folks, and we suspect it will be again in terms of volume and demand here shortly as people lose jobs and have to go out and find them again. And at $150, most of the people who buy it, we get all kinds of notes from people saying, my gosh, that's the best $150 I ever spent. And if you know us, you know that our license is $200. So to offer a $200 annual license and then a $150 product as an incentive seemed like a very generous offer in the beginning. We'll never know whether people would have bought licenses 15 years ago without the interviewing series, but we had a number of people subscribe right away. And that was really the start of what Mike and I saw as the core of our business, which was talking to individual managers. Yes, we make money by working with corporate clients, although we didn't want to in the beginning. We've just since learned that that's how companies like to buy things. And so We're going to go where the market is. Unfortunately, one of the things that makes it bittersweet in our community right now, that it won't really be seen as our 15th anniversary. It will be seen as us needing it, meeting a need for folks who are going to be challenged in the coming recession. So when we say bring forward, mean not wait until June 26 to offer a license with the interviewing series as well. Next, I had an idea, and it actually didn't even come during the brainstorming session. It happened after the brainstorming session, and we basically got lucky. I suggested, and to be fair, it was easier for me to suggest this since the entire burden of work of this particular thing it falls completely on me. And by the way, after I had this idea, I reached out to some M conference attendees from last year on our private M conference WhatsApp thread. And they completely supported the idea. And the idea was to provide things I think daily to everyone in our community for whom we have an email address. Now, for those of you who don't know, Things I Think is a weekly email, comes out 6 a.m. Wednesday morning Pacific time every week. I've been writing it for 10 years. And if you'd ever told us that it would turn out to be the thing that it turned out, I would have said, no way. I mean, for those of you who don't know the history, 10 years ago, I said to Mike, I said, you know, I have these ideas that I'm looking at and thinking about, and maybe I mull them over for a couple of months. And I know this idea or this bit of information or this recommendation or this suggestion or encouragement for our audience relative to management or professional life or generally living an ethical life, let's call it that, they're never going to make it into a podcast, or they don't stand on their own as a podcast. I said, maybe just as a gift, as sort of a lanyap, if you will, for licensees, why don't I just send them an email with those kind of thoughts? Mike said, yeah, that sounds really good. Really good.
You know how I judge that? Judge whether it's good or not is, would I have wanted that? Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know that at the time. It turned out to be incredibly well received. In fact, there are people who subscribe, who are licensees, primarily, not for the show notes, which is incredible value, but for things. In fact, I've had a couple people cancel their licenses. I still really like to get things. Like, gosh, that's not really fair, is it? Anyway, so things is a weekly thing. And I said, you know what? Now we're all separated from one another. The shelter in place is really, people are making jokes about it, but you can tell people are getting frustrated. And for many managers, particularly, they're having to manage their teams at a distance. And it's already hard enough to manage people when you're co-located. We've been screaming the alarm for years of, you don't know how much harder it is to do remotely. But companies keep sending managers remote. And the reason why is it's cheaper. That's why. Don't believe it when your company says, this gives us access to the best talent. It doesn't. It's because it's cheaper. Real estate's not cheap, guys. But your home office is incredibly cheap to your company. That sounds terrible. And so I thought we needed a way to connect. And I said, you know, maybe I ought to tip my hat to what the community is going through and provide things I think every day, and not just to our licensees, but to everybody in our community. Now, again, my concern was, would it happen too often when people get bored of it? I mean, many people say, gosh, I know it's Wednesday when I get to read things. I look forward to it every week. And I asked our licensees on from the M conference last year. Again, we have a private thread there that, Mike, wouldn't you agree? Very helpful to us in terms of all these executives and managers who came to the M conference last year, sharing the ideas in an open forum. It's just incredible. Absolutely.
It's incredible.
Yeah. So I was wondering, was it too much? What would licensees that are paying for the license and the right to many other things, but also to things, how would they feel about it? And, you know, they rejected all of our concerns, and, you know, that's how great our licensees are. They were thinking about other people. So I write things now, not once a week. Usually, by the way, I write it Sunday morning and it goes out Wednesday. And now I'm writing it every single day. And boy, am I getting responses. So I want to mention something to you guys. If you have been getting things, the first one went out last Friday. And I spent Saturday morning answering over 100 responses to it. And to tell you the truth, it was at the first thing I looked at all these emails, incoming emails, I thought, oh gosh. And then as I got through them, it really lifted me up that so many people were thankful that we were able to do something. There was one person who called me a racist, but that's okay. I thought that was funny.
Funny thing for me is that, folks, if you don't know Mark, you probably figured it out by now. Like, the whole point of this exercise was to get additional revenue. And the greatest idea he had, and it is a great idea, generates absolutely no revenue. So there you go, partner. Thanks for giving away stuff for free. Yeah. More stuff for free. Yeah. That's our model here, manager. Yeah.
So my rejoinder to that.
I'm sure you have one.
Personal, yes. Personal attack, deeply offensive personal attack is, remember what I said at the beginning? We're looking for revenue, but we're looking to grow revenue, but we were looking for ideas, not revenue. If we're looking for revenue, I would just have people turn out their wallets and throw the money in a pot or wire it to us. We're looking for ideas. I mean, even a product wouldn't create revenue until it got sold. And so we were looking at promotions. We also mentioned discounts. I suppose you could put this in the form of a discount. But we also believe that, we certainly don't think we're unique, we believe we're very fortunate to have built up a very loyal audience, a very loyal community. We know that one of the things that's happened in the last 5 years is people have started reaching out to each other rather than us being at the center of a spider web that has no interconnections. It just has a bunch of rays going out. And there are friendships and connections and mentoring happening throughout the community because, hey, you're a manager tools manager. I could use some help on this. What do you recommend I do about this problem? And so on. And it occurred to me that the podcasts were free and I write the podcast. And then I thought, you know, maybe we'll put out things I think every day and we'll provide a little relief, a little guidance, a little help to all of our community. And they'll remember that when things get better and they'll become a licensee because, well, maybe because they like getting things I think in terms of paying for value, but more importantly, paying us back, if you will, for our giving freely in others' time of need. You know, I often tell people that if you really want to ask yourself what kind of life you've lived, ask yourself who's in your 2 a.m. club. If it were 2 a.m., how many people could you, and you just got in a road accident, how many people could you call and how many people would come? And we feel like we're doing our best to earn the right to have you in our 2 a.m. club. And I say this, I go on this long tangent for another reason, and that's this. There are many of you, thousands, actually, based on our data, tens of thousands of you who are listening to this right now, and we don't have your email address. We don't know who you are. Our logs suggest we're downloaded thousands of times, but our email list is less than 100,000. We want the opportunity to stay in touch with you. Yes, we think that will benefit us, but rest assured, we don't wish for it to benefit us if it doesn't benefit you more greatly.
Yeah, we start in the equation on the side of the equation of generating value, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, folks, if you're listening and we don't have your email address, and by the way, you'll know that because you're not getting emails from us, come to the website, sign up for a free account. And the moment you sign up for a free account, you'll start getting my daily email, things I think. And you don't need to pay us for it. This is us saying we understand where you are and we understand things are hard. And, you know, many hands make light work. And I hope we all get through this together. And we're going to help whether you send us your email address or not.
That was a good answer to my question.
I just got choked up.
Okay. Yeah.
Anybody who thinks this is all about money, wow. We're talking about cost and revenue, but anyway.
Yeah.
All right. A couple of more ideas. I want to share them. If you sign up for a conference before the end of COVID-19, you don't pay until the conference takes place. Okay. Now, look, guys, if there was ever a moment where we got to the edge, the far edge of the open kimono approach we try to take, it's this. We haven't decided to do this yet. And there's risks for us of doing that because we have to model it first. And we're not sure the model. Mike's pretty smart about predicting models and we're not sure it'll work. But the idea here is partially marketing and give us a chance to talk about future confidence. But it's also about trying to understand what our potential conference customers might be thinking. If your company isn't allowing any spending, you can probably still get your manager to approve a modest future spend. You can reserve a spot at the conference that works best for you. And that helps us gauge potential cash inflows and when they might be happening. Wendy and Sarah had this idea. Of course, the downside is if there is no burden of ethical responsibility to know you're going to have to pay for a slot, even if you don't use it, you don't have to pay now. There's no obligation to fill out a credit card or to request an invoice from us. We wonder whether or not people will take advantage of that and sign up for conferences. And that revenue might appear to be forthcoming and yet not be as likely as our typical revenue models are. So there's some risk there for us. Heaven forbid people cancel last minute because they didn't really mean to sign up. And that keeps other people who would have had a slot at the conference, as more and more of our conferences have been selling out in the last couple of years, that would keep somebody who was a legitimate attendee from coming. Another idea, for conference signups before the end of COVID-19, get a license and or the video product that supports that, so video EMC if you sign up for the EMC, so you can start learning now. If you sign up for a conference now, you clearly have a desire to learn about managing or communicating or hiring, whatever it is. But if you can't come for 3 months, why should you have to delay your learning if you're ready to do so now? We normally sell these videos for $350 each, and it's literally me presenting the training without interactivity, although it gives you the opportunity to ask questions by email. So we normally sell these versions for $350, and we generally, as I said before, we don't like discounting, but this seems like the right way to help folks learn now rather than at some point in the future in person. If we did both, the license would be a very serious discount on top of that. Next idea. Somebody suggested we should finish our creation of the new Manager Tools Disc product. If you haven't heard, we're in the middle of a project to create our own disc instrument, which we could sell at vastly lower prices than what we have to charge now by contract legally with our vendor, Wiley. And as a rough idea, think paying $30 for a disc that rather than $75. The problem with this idea is there's plenty of work still to be done, and we're not sure that spending time on this and potentially also having to spend on outside tech resources to implement it, which we talked about cutting previous part of the show, it would be the most useful effort. That is coming, folks. But that's a tough lift for us right now. Another idea, somebody said we should discount all of our video products immediately. Discount VEMC, VECC, VHMC to $250 versus the present price of $350. And look, guys, no question, discounting is always on the table during downturns. The pricing mechanism tells us that lessened demand will drive prices lower. I had a fascinating conversation with somebody the other day. They said, I heard that gas was $1.70 a gallon. Okay. And that it's true. There are places in the country, in the US, where gas is $1.70 a gallon. And that's incredibly cheap. And then this person said, and nobody's buying. And I said, yeah, I'm not sure how those things are. And they're like, well, why wouldn't everybody buy? I said, well, first of all, a lot of people aren't driving, but more importantly, the supply and the price are not driving demand. Demand is driving supply. Nobody wants it. And so they're going to keep lowering their price until it's so good. All the market is telling you, this is the beauty of capitalistic exchanges. The market's telling you, I don't want it. It's not good enough yet. Now, some smart person is probably saying, I'm going to go to the filling station and get $50. You know, I'm going to get a bunch of gas. I hope they don't set their garage on fire and have it explode, but and then say I got some cheap gas during the downturn. We always hesitate about discounting because so much of our guidance is free. I mentioned before about the podcast, and we think our products are more than fairly priced. I mean, I don't know that everybody else agrees, but that's how I feel about it. We also had an idea: client EMC. Delivering our effective manager conference to a group of managers at a client company, turning it into 4 2-hour sessions. The day is basically 8 or 9 hours long with a chance for Q&A, and delivering that over Zoom, over video conference. And that addresses the issue of costs for clients and also travel restrictions as well. We could also promote, market, push more the video products that our people are able to consume at home, that we don't need to do a training event where people would be violating all kinds of social distancing rules. You know, if you can't come to us or we can't come to you, you can still learn. We think, look, we know it because trust me, whatever you have in your head that you think other people know, trust me, a big portion of the people in the world don't know it. A lot of folks don't even know that they can get the exact content we provide in person for all of our conferences over video for 1/3 of the cost of attending in person. Now, this is marketing to promote something, but we, as a general rule, we don't spend money to market because we think of you, dear listener, as our marketing department. We also had a suggestion, and again, this is the last one I'll mention because in the interest of time, but there were more. These are the ones that got the most input. A new two-hour delivered by Zoom courses on things like how to manage remotely, how to interview, how to start a job search, how to lay people off. That one's tough, but you might want to know how to do it. There's certainly a boom in video calls right now and video delivery right now. That said, our experience is video training, live video training, is much harder than people say. It's really hard to keep folks' attention for more than a couple of hours. And we'd have to figure out pricing for that. And so, just to be clear, if it wasn't clear, we tried to insinuate it.
Yeah, don't go to the website, try to buy these things yet. Yeah. You won't find them.
Yeah, we're now in the process of deciding which of these and when and how and so on. And so, again, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love your email address if you're listening, and we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and if there's a product that you want, that you think we should have for you, and it's not offered, tell us what it is.
Yeah. Another thing that came up on the list, which we didn't get to because of the interest of time, is bundling certain show notes around COVID-19, around distance management, and so on, and providing those in a package rather than. If you don't know it, folks, if you're not a licensee, you can always come to the website and you can buy show notes for a particular show. Mike, I think it's $15 for one show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we could bundle five or six of them together to make it easy for you rather than you having to go to each one of those shows and capture each one of them, pay for each one of them, provide some sort of bulk discount. We could do that as well. But again, that's just another idea we have in the offing.
And your business will be different, obviously, unless you're in a management consulting company.
Yeah.
Your ideas for your company are going to be different. And the point here was, I hope it doesn't sound like we're trying to sell stuff, because we're not, because the products don't exist.
We spent 15 years not trying to sell stuff.
Right.
I mean, think about this now. If you're listening right now, how many podcasts do you listen to that don't have any ads? In fact, the whole model of podcasting is get a big audience and then sell ads.
Go sell ads, yeah.
Well, we would prefer not to monetize you to somebody else. Okay, so let me summarize. We've been so long-winded on this, and I apologize. I have a lot of energy around this. You know, we have a podcast called Downturn Rite of Passage, that one of the things people like me who've spent some time as a recruiter and do a lot of career coaching and helping people and seeing what they need to do and helping them make transitions, one of the things that we look at when we're looking at resumes is, has this person ever been through a notable downturn with one company? Or every single time thing went bad in a particular industry or company, did they leave and jump to somewhere else? Okay. And that's not a good thing. Again, downturn rite of passage. So I'm particularly interested in you learning as much as you can during this time now, so you can respond more quickly to whatever you need to be doing right now. And you'll be ready the next time something like this happens. You'll have a playbook already written. And big picture, what is that playbook? What it should say? How should it feel at a high level? The first thing is be frugal now and for the foreseeable future, and make sure you have cash for the next time this happens. It's not if, it's when. Don't be afraid to cut hard and deep, and even having people push back to you against expenses, and save people for last, for heaven's sakes, even if they're the biggest one. You know what? People expenses are easy to cut. Easy isn't the way to greatness. Tell your people what you're doing and why you're doing it. Don't fall into the trap of thinking someone else isn't doing it. Trust yourself. Do the right thing. Live to fight another fight. And as I've been saying lately, in lots of my emails to people in this very interesting time we're living in, stay frosty, dudes.
All right. Thanks, dude. All right. See y'all next week.